Hello world and welcome to a brand new episode of Movie Night with Colin Mill. Originally the show was called originally was At the Movies with Colin Mill. I almost messed myself up just now. But I changed it from At the Movies with Colin Mill because At the Movies used to be an actual movie review show. I don't know how old you are or young you are, but if you're as old as me or even older, you remember there used to be a show called At the Movies that used to be on ABC. That had, you know, Ebert and Roper, you know, and I don't want to get sued by those dudes. I don't know if the show is still on the air. I think probably in smaller cities or just online. I'm not sure what happened to At the Movies after, you know, was it Ebert that were? I think it's Ebert who died. But after Ebert left, you know, the At the Movies series hasn't really been on. I mean, no, I'm lying. It still was on the air. It just, I guess, wasn't as entertaining after Roger Ebert passed away. You know, I think Gene Siskel is the one who kept the show going. And, you know, in the beginning it was called Siskel and Ebert At the Movies. And then it became At the Movies with Ebert and Roper. And, after Ebert died, which was in 2013, you know, the show, I believe, kept going. You know, I know it was in Canada. I know, yeah, I think it's still on the Reels Network. I'm not sure, but I know the series went on permanent hiatus in December 2011 due to lack of financial underwriting. You know, and I really don't know how much it costs to just review movies on TV. You know, but I know it's like probably cheaper and, you know, way cheaper to do it on the internet like I do it. But, you know, hey, to each his own. You know. So, yeah, I believe that the 24 seasons of the national syndication of At the Movies ended with 2010 with, you know, Scott Pilgrim versus the World and Expendables. You know, I remember that summer. That was a good summer. But it's not this summer. This summer has not been a good summer for summer blockbusters. You know, as you know, majority of movie theaters, has been closed because of Corona. So, legit, I haven't been in a movie theater since, I would say, March of 2020, when I went to go see, the last films I saw was Bloodshot, The Hunt, and I think Sonic. Yeah, I believe Sonic. Those were the last couple of films I've seen in theaters. And since then, everything had to been stream on demand or premium on demand. You know, I had to see Trolls 2 World Tour on Vudu. Scoob, I had to see on Vudu. You know, right now it says Mulan, I'm gonna have to see on Disney Plus, and have to, instead of paying the usual price for Disney Plus, I'm gonna have to actually pay $30 to see Mulan on Disney Plus. So it looks like this premium video on demand thing is gonna be around for quite some time. You know, I'm pretty sure Black Widow will be on its way in that same direction. And, you know, it sucks not being able to go to the movies because you guys know me. I go to the movies at least 3 times a week, at least see 3 films. And, you know, I've been devastated this summer. No blockbusters. You know, I didn't get to see the new Fast and the Furious this year. It's taking a toll on me. But, you know, I always find a way to get my movie fix, you know. So, recently, we had a drive-in theater. Not even a theater, but they're having, you know, drive-in movies in some locations because of COVID, you know. And I decided, you know, I have to go check one out because I've never been in a drive-in movie before. So I wanted to experience it for myself and see what was going on. So around my way, they have Movie in Your Car, and they're showing movies at your college near my way. Well, the parking lot of your college. And last weekend, they were showing Harlem Nights. Now, Harlem Nights is the 1989 American crime comedy drama written, executive produced, and directed by Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy co-stars with Richard Pryor, and they run a nightclub in the 1930s Harlem with, you know, the usual gangsters and corrupt police officials. You know, you got Danny Aiello, Red Fox, which was his last film before he died in 91, Della Reese, Charlie Murphy. You know, it was... to me, an all-star film, you know, all-star black film, you know, like, all your favorite black comedians around that time, well, not all of them, but there's a good chunk of them in there, you know what I mean? No, well, I shouldn't even just say comedians, because just black faces in general that you love. You know, Robin Harris was in this movie. You know, Jasmine Guy was in this movie. Arsenio Hall was in this movie. You know, you got Thomas McKeel Ford. Rest in peace, Tommy. You know, like, you got so many people in this movie. And, you know, I gotta be honest with you. When I was a kid growing up to see this, like, I didn't find this movie entertaining at all. I didn't really find it interesting at all growing up, you know. Mostly because I, at that age, one, I didn't, you know, understand the underworld like that. Two, you know, 1930s Harlem, I definitely did not know enough about, you know. So, you know, I watched the movie because I recognized the faces, but I was, I guess I was amused, but I wasn't really entertained. Like, I remember rewatching it. I first saw it maybe when I was like maybe 10, 11, especially when Busta Rhymes did a parody of it in his Pascal Vassier video. Then I saw it again when I was like 15 going on 16, and I still wasn't that interested in it. But, you know, like you guys, like I've been telling you guys, I've been devastated. I've been wanting to go to the movies. I want to see something. So I was like, you know what, let's go to the drive-in and go see Harlem Nights, because Harlem Nights is not on my top list of Eddie Murphy movies. It's not on my top list of, you know, black films. It's not on my top list of gangster films, you know, crime dramas, crime comedies. You know, it's not on any of those lists. But, you know, I wanted to see it, you know. And especially because Harlem Nights is the only directorial effort made by Eddie Murphy. You know, he said he always wanted to direct and star in a period piece. And as well as work with Richard Pryor, who he considered the greatest influence in stand-up comedy. And, you know, the movie, even though it was a financial success, because it grossed $95 million against a $30 million budget, Paramount was like, nah, y'all failed, because it's not a $100 million movie like how you guys did with Coming to America or Beverly Hills Cops. Because Beverly Hills Cops 2 and Coming to America, those films were like blockbusters when they came out. You know, Coming to America was $36 million, and it made almost $350 million in theaters. And I believe Beverly Hills Cops was somewhere around $27 million, and that made $300 million, so like, it's Paramount saw that little measly old $95 million, and it was like, bruh, that's not a success. What you talking about? I mean, you know, I'm sitting here like, bruh, $95 million is a lot of money. You know, especially if your budget was only $30 million. But, you know, they wasn't with it. But I went to go see the movie in the drive-in, and not even surprisingly, I'm not even shocked about this, I found more stuff from this film that I didn't pick up when I was a kid. You know, there were jokes where I was starting to understand them a lot better. You know, the story I was able to understand all the way through. You know, I still don't like the slow pacing, and, you know, I feel like I still don't believe the movie is Eddie Murphy's funniest. Like, it's not the funniest Eddie Murphy movie to me at all. But I enjoyed it a lot better than I've ever did before. I'm not going to lie, you know. And I don't know why the movie didn't do well back in the day. All these faces in there, you would have thought this would have been a blockbuster hit, as well as the last ones, you know. Maybe it could be the fact back in November 17, 1989, there were two men who were shot and killed inside of an AMC theater in Detroit when they were showing this movie in the suburb of Michigan, I believe, or Southfield, Michigan. You know, according to an eyewitness that was quoted in the Detroit Free Press, the shooting happened on opening night, you know, during a shooting spree that happened in the film's opening. You know, a 22-year-old woman panicked, ran into traffic, and was critical condition 2 days after in Providence Hospital. But the police named her name. And, you know, less than an hour after the shooting, the police arrived to the theater to find a 24-year-old man who he had shot at an officer, and the gunman was wounded when the police shot at him back in the theater parking lot. The incident caused the theater to change to cancel showings of Harlem Night. And, you know, it messed up because, you know, I'm pretty sure there was a lot of people there, and, you know, they just stopped the movie. I heard they stopped the movie 3 times, you know. And from what I've heard, there were people fighting in Sacramento that was showing the movie. And apparently that fighting went into the parking lot, and that ended with gunshots where two 24-year-old men were seriously injured. And then I think another person an hour later was shot in Richmond, California, you know, seeing the same movie. And the police stopped the projection of Harlem Nights just trying to find a suspect. And, you know, it was like a whole hour riot that went down. And it was just like, you know, I hear stories all the time where they're like, oh, you know, people were shooting up during Boys in the Hood or Men's in Society. I definitely did not expect Harlem Nights to to be one of those films where people were just shooting up in the theaters. You know, people were blaming the movie. They're like, oh, it glorified violence. But I've seen that movie. That movie's not that violent. I've seen some more violent movies. That movie is not violent at all. You know what I mean? But it would explain why the theaters around my way growing up in the 90s had metal detectors. If you're from Southside Jamaica, Queens, or somewhere between the Alice Stream and Rosedale, and you went to the Green Acre Theaters or the Sunrise Theater, you got to remember the metal detectors. Those metal detectors were in there all the time. I thought it was normal until I went to another theater and saw, wait, you guys don't have metal detectors here? But that's another story. So anyways, like I said, I enjoyed the drive-in movie theater experience. You know, it was very new to me. Yeah, you know, I had to get in there. I didn't know what was the radio station to listen to the movie itself. So I had to try to find a station, you know. It was cool to see all these other cars there. Everybody was enjoying the movie from their car. You know, you still get the light coming from the projector onto the big screen, you know. So it still feels like, you know, the movie experience. The only difference is you're in your car. And granted, I do watch a lot of movies in my car on my phone. You know, hook it up to the Bluetooth. Just watch it on my phone. Is it the same thing? Close. The only difference is it's on a bigger screen and there's more people there. But, you know, I definitely want to do more drive-in movies this summer. I really do. And, you know, it looks like the movie theater are not going to open anytime soon. So, why not? You know? So, it's either, you know, go to the drive-in or get movies that are now released online that go straight to streaming or straight to digital or straight to download, you know? Now, speaking of movies that is straight to download, straight to digital, straight to whatever you want to call it, I just saw a film today called The Tax Collector. Now, I saw the trailer maybe a month or two ago, but, you know, I was just like, let me wait till I see the film before I say anything about it. So, The Tax Collector is the 2020 American action thriller film written, directed, and produced by David Ayer. David Ayer was the writer of Training Day. He also directed films like Suicide Squad. He also did, what was it, Street Kings, you know, Bright, you know, Sabotage, you know, he's done a lot of these, you know, dark cop movies, you know, what was that other one he did? Fury, End of Watch, Harsh Times, you know, I believe he was the writer on SWAT and Fast and Furious and Taking Lives, you know, but, you know, this one, like, this film pretty much feels just like any of those films I just mentioned, you know. I realize that, you know, David Ayer really makes the same film over and over, just with just a little different flavor. You know, most of his films basically look like Training Day. You know, just Training Day from a different perspective, from different perspectives of the streets of L.A. You know what I mean? Whether it's Street Kings, whether it's Bright, whether it's End of Watch, or even now here we are with The Tax Collector, it just feels like, you know, he's just really good at making gritty Los Angeles films. And I don't mind it. I do love his brand of, you know, gritty Los Angeles movies, you know. I noticed he also recast the same people from Training Day all over and over. But that's beside the point. So this film was shot back in 2018. You know, I believe it has, I think maybe four production companies that were working with it. None of the big ones, you know, whether like Disney or WB or any of these guys. You know, you had Cross Street Pictures, Set Apart Entertainment, Eyewood Studios, you know, Atwater Capital. Not the hugest names when you think of film productions, but, you know, they out here. And, you know, it was distributed by RLJE Films or RLJ Entertainment. That's the company that was, well, it was founded, the parent, by Robert L. Johnson, the guy who co-founded BET, but he ended up selling it to Viacom in 2001. But, you know, this is his new production distribution company. And, you know, they distribute a lot of stuff. Like, I got nothing bad to say about these guys. They do distribute a lot of stuff. But, I don't know. When it comes to these type of movies, when they go straight to video, I get worried. Because it's like, okay, you know, it's not a studio behind it. You know, the independent joint. Sort of, you know, because when you got celebrities and big name directors, people don't really look at it as independent. But technically, it's independent. You know, I'm pretty sure this had a low budget, maybe not the lowest of the low budget, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't like, you know, I'm sure it was a step down from the Suicide Squad for David Ayer. But, you know, it was. I don't know how to describe The Tax Collector. So the film stars Bobby Soto, George Lopez, and Shia LaBeouf. You know, the film follows two tax collectors working for a Los Angeles crime lord whose business becomes, you know, basically it starts falling apart when an old rival returns back to Los Angeles from Mexico. So, I like the movie. I don't hate it. You know, I don't know. Something about it just feels like it's missing something. You know what I mean? Like, because I've seen low-budget movies. Not low-budget, but, you know, not up there. And, you know, I've seen movies that's, like, somewhere between the $4 to $5 million budget that's, you know, that takes place within a small community, you know, especially if it's, like, the Mexican community. Like, one of my favorite movies I saw last year was El Chiquino. El Chiquino, to me, was one of the best slept-on movies of last year. You know, now, I'm not of Latino descent. You know, I am of Haitian descent, and Haitians definitely have a lot of Afro-Latino culture embedded in it. You know, we got to make sure a whole bunch of African, Latino, you know, French all roll up in one. So I tend to, you know, gravitate to things that's related to my culture. But the thing is, this movie just felt like it was, I don't want to say it wasn't authentic, because it definitely had some authenticity. You know, it definitely had some moments that felt authentic, but there was moments where it also felt diluted. You know, moments where the pacing felt off. You know, a lot of people were complaining about Shia LaBeouf. They say he was being in brown face, and even though he wasn't in literal brown face, they felt like he was in brown face as an actor, pretending to be a Chiquino or a Vato. I don't know what you guys call yourself out there. I'm sorry if I disrespected anybody, but I didn't think he was in brown face. You know, according to David Ayer, he's the character he's playing is a white guy who grew up in the hood. So he's just a Jewish guy playing a white guy. You know, he's not playing a Spanish guy. You know, I'm sure he does speak in, you know, the slang of the streets, you know, of the hood of Los Angeles. All right, but, you know, I don't feel like he was in brown face. I don't know. But I don't think I have that right to say whether he was in brown face or not, because I'm not brown. So maybe y'all take my word for it. But I don't feel like he was in brown face. A lot of the cast of that movie said Shia LaBeouf wasn't in brown face. People would say, oh, look at his haircut. Look at all the tattoos that he got for this movie. That's the culture. That is the culture. What can I say? I don't know. But I feel like there definitely wasn't enough action in between. You know, there was definitely a lot of dialogue. You know, and, you know, the action started showing up slowly at the end of the movie. But I felt like there should have been a lot more action in the beginning. You know, there was a lot of, you know, character building. And, you know, there wasn't enough character development, though. You know what I mean? Like, there was bits and pieces of it. But, you know, it still felt like it felt flat a little bit in certain scenes, you know. Now, I don't hate it. But it's not something where I'm like, oh, man, everybody got to see this movie. Like, El Chiquino, I left out saying, oh, everybody got to watch El Chiquino. This is the movie right here. This thing is fire. This one, I'm just like, if you're bored, you know, you want to see Shia LaBeouf play a gangster in Los Angeles, you know, you want to see some movie stars, some you know, with some Latinos, then, hey, this movie might be for you. But if, you know, if you're looking for something that's like, that's going to have you think about it all weekend long, I that's not it. You know, I've gotten more recently out of the Danny Trejo documentary, Inmate Number One, than I've gotten from this film. You know what I mean? Like, I don't hate it, but I'm not in love with it either. You know, I wish there was more action. I wish there was more character development. You know, I feel like this could have worked better as a series. Like, this could have been a great Netflix series, but this feels like a Netflix original film. And not all Netflix original films are on point. You know, they have all the pieces, but it's just like, it's fast food. It's like, here, take it and go. You know, and it's all right. You know, if you're looking for a movie to watch, you're looking to be entertained, you know, you want to see some brutal violence, because there's definitely some brutal violence in this movie, then The Tax Collector's for you. But I definitely think it could have been better. But that's what this episode of At the Movies, well, oops, is now Colin Mill Movie Night with Colin Mell. I will be doing more soon. We're going to drop more some videos of all the previous times we were at the movie in the last 2 years, since, you know, all the movie theaters are closed now. So I want to share all my movie experience with you guys and, you know, help you guys reminisce on the good days when we actually walk into a theater and enjoy it. But until next time, much love, God bless, two pieces of chicken grease. I'll see you later.